it loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
Mr. All Born Radio.
I'm a good person.
You know, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the world championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I.
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Welcome back in. It is the Cube Show. Happy to be a part on this. Oh, Lord.
One of my friends.
Oh, that's Diet Cole over there who's showing me. Okay, so you know the crying Jordan meme, which I despise. And anybody who sends it to me, I block them. That's just my thing. It's the dumbest meme out there. Now there is a new meme going around the old internet. Basically a stock footage of one cute girl walking down the sidewalk toward the camera, and a couple, a man and a woman, walking the other way. But the man is looking back at the pretty woman that passed him, like, ooh-wee, look at that. And pursing his lips and everything. It's very weird. And the current girl who is walking next to him, and assuming the girlfriend, is looking at the boy like she's disgusted. So that's the new meme where everybody's putting on it. And you just showed me that someone had edited it to where Cole Kublick is the new hot girl. The referee is the guy who's looking around and being pursed lips like, look at that. And the crying Jordan meme is looking at the ref. Is that what you got? Is that what it is?
I'll show it to you again.
Oh, no, it's just the girl looking normal.
Yeah, okay. The girl's normal. Everything else is changed. One of my friends,
you should share that.
Yeah, one of my friends sent that to me.
Retweet that from the Cube Show as well once you share it. We're here on a Friday, a Hubba Helmet Fantasy Football Friday, which we're going to have a lot of fun on. We still got a lot to cover, a few guests on the program as well. Thoughts coming in from you on Twitter, on Facebook, on the old text window. And the text window is where it's at, because for 3 more hours, and that is it. Once it hits 10:00, even though that's like 3 minutes after the show's over, that's it. I will not take a single more submission for the Cube Show Hover Helmet Challenge. All you got to do is send a college quarterback, a college running back, a college wide receiver that are playing this weekend, even through Monday's game. The most combined points wins a hover helmet, which is literally a hovering helmet. Super cool. I also want to thank Diaco for taking a picture of the hover helmet and sitting it out already. You haven't done that yet, have you?
I needed caffeine.
Yeah, you went searching for caffeine.
Yeah, that was priority, but that's next on my agenda, so no worries.
So get those in. You can text those in to 910-663-5663. You can tweet them in as well, but if you're going to tweet them, I would want you to tag me in the tweets. I don't want to go sifting through the Cube Show Twitter for days trying to figure out who has what, and we'll put it on the list and we'll do the math over the weekend. The winner will be announced on Tuesday. We are still doing a show Monday, but we're going to include Monday's game. That way, if you pick someone for Monday's game Tuesday, you will find out the winner right here on the Ump. Also coming up in about 20 minutes from now, we got the exclusive pregame audio from Coach Ed Orgeron. He's already recorded his pregame speech for BYU, and it's pretty nice.
You have to practice these things.
I'm just surprised he recorded it, you know. But that's coming up in about 20 minutes. Last night was a fun night to just get back to college football action. Indiana holds off to win against Ohio State in the first half. They play two halves, so they win by one in the first half, lose by 29 in the second half, and then that's the final score, 49-21 in favor of Ohio State. Ohio State not looking like the number two team in the first half. They were sitting on Mike Weber because he had a hamstring issue. It was only about 80%, they said on the broadcast. So they had this true freshman coming in, this kid named Dobbins.
J.K.
J.K. Dobbins. Sorry, just kidding, Dobbins. He came in and ran for a ton of yards. Was it 181
on 29 carries.
Yeah, 173 is the last number I saw, but 181 is where he finished and really kept that team battling in the first half because J.K. Dobbins was the only guy that was really moving the ball consistently. I mean, J.T. Barrett was not very effective deep down the field for the entire night, but he had some intermediate passes where he found people like Paris Campbell Jr. would go on to as soon as Indiana took the lead 21-20 and started chanting overrated. Immediately the next play was Paris Campbell Jr. going 74 yards for a touchdown. And this is a guy that struggled early in the game, too. Dropped what would have been a huge first down conversion for them. That same drive, I think the next drive, dropped what was a wide open touchdown catch down the left hash.
It was probably Barrett's best throw of the night. It was about a 40-yard pass down the hash and he just dropped it. I mean, it hit him right in the hands. No defender was on him or anything. He just dropped the ball.
And at that point, you thought, is this guy just gonna be ruined for this game? He's just not gonna be able to come back.
Is the yips?
Yep. And then later, not long later either. Not long later either. This is a weird thing to say. I guess it's correct. Not long after, he gets that mesh route that they're starting to call it, instead of sort of the pick play.
Right.
I like when they change the nomenclature. It's like mesh route as opposed to just a normal pick play, a crossing pattern. It's a mesh route. That's basically a pick play where you unintentionally or intentionally try to pick off one of the defenders by crossing over the field, across the field, and that's where Paris Campbell got open. Got a couple of times for big plays on that pattern. JT Barrett ends the game. His numbers look better than what they were playing like to start the game. He accounted for 4 touchdowns last night. But in the first half, they could not score in the red zone touchdowns. They were having to come up with field goals, two of them, I think, on drives that got inside the 5-yard line. And you thought, this has got to be a team that plays a lot better than this inside the red zone. Sure. Moving the ball okay and effectively enough from 20 to 20, but they've got to put the ball into the red zone.
I mean, he finished with 304 yards and 3 touchdowns, no picks, which sounds like really great numbers, but he was off. About 3 quarters, he was off and inaccurate. He didn't complete many long balls. The longest touchdown pass for him was that mesh route you're talking about, which was like a 6 or 7 yard route that Campbell just took the rest of the way. The final score itself.
Yeah, that was 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. I mean, let's not act like it was first and second quarter action. You're 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, and that's when you go up for good.
Right. The final score was definitely not indicative of how Ohio State played last night. But I will give them a pass for the simple fact that they do have a new offensive coordinator, Kevin Wilson. That first half, they looked really sloppy.
Guy that was fired at Indiana. But, right. You know, nice job picking him up.
And again, to that point, the Indiana players had to know a little bit what was coming, having played for Wilson for the last few years. But either way, when you're indoctrinating basically a whole new offensive system, there are going to be some bumps in the road. And they ended up having nearly 600 yards of total offense, 49 points. Like, things looked in the third and fourth quarter the way you would expect them to look for the number two team. But it got off to a bumpy start. And
yeah, very bumpy. I mean, even though the first drive, they moved the ball very well. They got inside the 5. I think at the 2-yard line, still had to kick a field goal. And then you see Indiana come back and score a great touchdown, a great throw from Lagow, who put the team up 7-3. You come back the other way, another field goal. I mean, the team just did not look very much in sync the entire first half. The second half, though, that defense was ferocious. That defensive line, and I'll tell you this, I wasn't expecting Indiana to run the ball a lot. They had nowhere to go the entire night. There was no reason that Indiana could have expected to run the ball for half a second. Because every time they would hand the ball off, there were 2 or 3 white jerseys already in the backfield by the time you're getting to the handoff point. That defense was filthy, especially in the second half. Kept them in the game in the first half. They made their adjustments at halftime. But the second half, they were all over Lagow. And they were over him in the first half, too. But in the second half, he just had zero time to do anything.
Like in the first half, if he could get more than 2 to 3 seconds to throw the ball, then he was getting passes completed downfield. Because Ohio State's breaking in an entire new secondary. Like, almost all of it was drafted in the first round last year. He was getting rid of the ball really quickly. But in the second half, if he held onto the ball for longer than 2 seconds, somebody from that Ohio State defensive line was in the backfield. Like Nick Bosa, who somehow is a backup, even though he may be the most talented guy on that defensive line. That ought to tell you how deep that D-line is. He was in the backfield the entire third quarter, it seemed like. And now they're really going to be put to the test next Saturday when they play Oklahoma, who has maybe the best offensive line in the country in Baker Mayfield. But the way they looked, I mean, that defensive line was just nasty.
Find me 59. He's the guy that led the team in sacks the last 2 years for Ohio State. He was key in that in that first half. I think he had a sack in the first half to start off. I think it was the first sack of the season for either one of the teams.
Tyquan Lewis.
Tyquan Lewis, yeah. I wanted to say Raekwon, but that's only because I got Raekwon on my mind for Raekwon Davis. Tyquan Lewis has been absolutely a stud, and he will be again this year. That defensive line was deeper than I thought it was going to be. Like they now, again, it's Indiana, and I give Ohio State a lot of credit because game one, a Thursday night, a conference game, going on the road, if you can win that, I give you all the credit in the world, even if you win it by 3 points, because that's an interesting, weird kind of situation to be in, even though you have an entire offseason, technically, to prepare for it. But the fact that they pulled away in the second half showed their depth, showed that apparently giving the ball to the guys who are really good is a really good plan, because that's what they are loaded with. And this Ohio State offense has a chance, if they play like they did in the second half, to be really special this year. But you wonder if there's a couple of games that are going to run up on them this year that are going to challenge them in the Big Ten more. And, you know, not even going all the way out to the Michigan game, I don't know if the Oklahoma defense is going to do much challenging. The Oklahoma offense, maybe. And I expect Oklahoma to be able to run more for more than 17 yards.
Well, that's a good point. And because when I was thinking of their toughest matchups this year, Penn State and Oklahoma, first they get them both home, which is nice. But neither one of those teams have a premier defense, which you could see a team like of course, in Alabama, but a team that or maybe even Michigan from last year, a defense like that shutting down that Ohio State offense and that being a competitive game. But it's hard to imagine even the best offense is putting up like 30-something points on that Ohio State defense. Especially once that secondary gets more playing time. Because the Lagout was just picking on, I think it was Denzel Ward, the corner, number 12. He was just picking on
him. Oh, he was on him all night.
Play after play.
In that first half, I should say, yeah.
But you would expect guys like that in that secondary to improve once the season goes on. And Urban Meyer has a great track record of developing defensive backs, even in season. From game one to like game six, they're going to look like completely different players. So I don't know if there's a defense on the schedule that can really shut down the offense enough to make it competitive.
It'll be interesting to see who takes more of a step defensively this year, Oklahoma or Penn State. I want to say Penn State, but I'm also not 100% sure that could be true. Oklahoma's just in a bad position where they play in such a fastball offense or a conference that's, let's see. How many different times have we named this thing? Fastball, hurry up, no huddle, NASCAR, spread. Like they play such an offensive type league like that where it's just hard to put up great defensive numbers. No matter how good some of your talent just may be, you're constantly out there on an island, it feels like, with the way they spread that out. Let's go to 10 After Tweets right now.
Bring me the tweets!
10 After Tweets comes 10 After Every Hour, brought to you by First Family Mortgage. It's 1FMC.com, or you can give them a call at 425-0105. Save you a whole bunch of money on your mortgage. Consolidate some debt. Look at that final mortgage number Conrad's been telling you about. The mortgage payment that you make every month, multiply that by 360. And at the end of a 30-year loan, that's what you're paying total for your house. If that looks like a way too big number, give them a call, 425-0105, and they can help you out. By the way, speaking of 0105, personal pet peeve of mine, when people say oh instead of zero when they talk about numbers. They give you phone numbers like, hey, give me a call, 425-0105. That's a letter, point. Not a number. Anyway, Cube Show Twitter is lit. Kevin Campbell tweets, first half, who's your daddy? Second half, Urban Sprawl. I like it. Like exactly what happened. Bama Hall Gachappi, who is a huge honk for the Arkansas Razorbacks, says, good to see the Hogs and Ed Cole Kublik back to work on a Thursday night. Hashtag do work.
He did work on the sideline.
They both did.
Yeah.
Arkansas, actually all three of them, Arkansas, the ref, and Cole Kublik.
Brett McMurphy tweeted last night, impressive showing by Ohio State. The Buckeyes have now scored a total of 49 points in their last two games.
49 points in the last... Oh! What the hell, man? Why would you bring up the Fiesta Bowl game? Why would you bring up that
low
shutout?
Low blow.
That is not cool at all. That is not even close to cool. By the way, if you're following, follow Cube Show. Follow Diet Cole as well. ColeFred24. We got a lot of new listeners, so hopefully they'll see. Because what happens at 7:40 is rarely do we get a chance to see the predator in his natural environment. We got NBA talk at 7:40, and that is again rare to see. That's where Diet Cole seems to flourish. Back on the Twitter sphere we go. Appreciates Nick tweets Cube Show. Michael Bennett has been very vocal and has taken a knee. If he were to be released, he'd have a new team in 5 minutes. I'm going to read a couple of tweets like this because it goes back to really a side point to what I was making a big giant general point. Frank Smith tweets, Cap has the right to say dumb stuff. NFL teams have the right not to sign him. Freedom is a two-way street. Also in on that, Arizona underscore J, Jason Thomas tweets, NFL is now accused of hiding evidence in the Zeke Elliott case. How can you not think they're colluding against Kaepernick? Come on, man. Yeah, there is some stuff there. Also got this tweet from Anthony Oliver. He is A-O-K-O, which, by the way, I low-key really like that name. Really good name on Twitter. AOKO1975 tweets, if Cap was blackballed, why did he try out with the Seahawks? Why did the Ravens consider? So all this is really the side point to what I was making, which was a giant point about how the NFL is and Roger Goodell is a big giant turd for what they're doing with Ezekiel Elliott. Because if you haven't seen the story yet, Ezekiel Elliott is apparently, according to the Players Association, supposed to get 0 games of a suspension. Because the lead investigator said she recommended 0 games because she was the lead investigator. I keep saying, again, it's important.
It is. It's a very important distinction.
The woman who is the only person in this entire investigation that talked to the accuser in this scenario said there's no reason to say Ezekiel Elliott should get a suspension because the woman who talked to the accuser was not credible. And the NFL left that out of its report that it gave to Roger Goodell and the independent counsel, and they found a reason to give him 6 games. That is blasphemous to me, to leave out very important pieces like an investigator, the lead one, saying what her recommendations are. To just completely not put that in a report? Oh, if that's true, that's dirty, man. That's dirty. That's the real point I was making, and how much Roger Goodell is trash. And if Roger Goodell and the NFL can continuously make mistakes like this, or not so make mistakes like this, how is it that far-fetched that a league of owners say, we don't want to deal with old Colin Kaepernick Day? Because if you notice, there's not protest about Michael Bennett and Ricardo Lewis and Marshawn Lynch taking knees. There aren't. It was about Colin Kaepernick. It's always been about Colin Kaepernick. Are you telling me Ricardo Lewis is a better wide receiver than Colin Kaepernick is a quarterback? That's all I'm saying. That's the side point. Now, whether or not it's true, I can't prove it. No one will ever be able to prove it. By the way, do you think the Ravens really considered Colin Kaepernick, or do you think they gave him a little lip service?
It's definitely the latter. And
I think that's lip service. Now, the Seahawks tryout is interesting because that is probably the most liberal fan base you're going to find. Even more so than San Francisco, I think, because you have a liberal, very much fan base, an atmosphere there with Pete Carroll, and a guy who says, hey, everybody just go ahead and talk as much as you want, because they let him talk, and they let him kind of do whatever they want.
I don't want to take over the segment with Colin Kaepernick talk, but we're talking about owners, and a commissioner in Roger Goodell, who we think could be behind this. And you compare him to a commissioner like Adam Silver of the NBA, who is very highly regarded amongst the players. If the Colin Kaepernick situation or the Ezekiel Elliott situation had happened to a player of similar stature in the NBA, I don't think this would be an issue at all. I think it would have been handled properly. I don't think a guy like Ezekiel Elliott would be suspended if he were in the NBA. I don't think Colin Kaepernick could be blackballed if he were in the NBA. And that starts at the top. That's just the difference between having a very strong leader and having someone like Roger Goodell as a leader.
I'm just saying I don't think that it's impossible. In fact, I think it's more possible. Not probable, possible. The more and more you learn about stuff that the NFL, their investigations, their disciplinary. That's why I think, and AOKO brings up another point, the commissioner works for the owners, not the players. Jerry Jones will play nice to get future Super Bowls. On another note, Brady is guilty. There's that out there. listen, I think Anthony is a big Broncos fan. So yeah,
hater.
Well, listen, we all hate. I hate a bunch of teams in the NFL because I'm a Cowboys fan. I believe 100% within my fiber. You will not be able to tell me successfully that someone else couldn't work for the owners and make a whole bunch of money and also take any kind of shots. The bad part is all the shots that he's having to absorb are coming from his decisions. The major, the deflate gate. His decision.
These are like
he fought it. By the way, he won it in federal court because the NFL Players Association agreed to Roger Goodell being the, you know, the judge, jury, and executioner of this. I would not be surprised if I saw the Players Association around 2020 wanting to do a work stoppage unless they get serious consideration for a new commissioner.
Every problem the NFL has, they are. These are like Plaxico Burress self-inflicted wounds from Roger Goodell himself. It's him. He's the one that's starting all
100%.
This. 100%. Like he is the problem. If he wouldn't mess up the first time, there wouldn't be an issue lingering throughout the entire season.
They'll try to argue the Players Association will to at least change Roger Goodell from being the only guy that in on the disciplinary. But can you? This is just ridiculous to me, because the for Ezekiel Elliott, the appeals process is over, and now it's in charge of a mediator who's going to try to figure this out, Gerald Henderson. If he decides over the weekend that Ezekiel Elliott gets zero games, burn a place to the ground. Because you see guys go from 8 to 4, 10 to 6, 4 to 2, 6 to 4 maybe. But if it gets up to 0 because of this new information that the lead investigator did not have her recommendation, even though she did all the investigating and her findings included in the final report that went to Roger Goodell and to the independent counsel to make the decision on suspension, that's gross, man. That's corrupt and gross. Why do you even have a lead investigator? Why'd you send somebody out there to do it to start off with? If that's the case, because there's a lot of pressure under him right now to rule by Monday, and they say that if he doesn't have a decision by Tuesday at 3 o'clock, the Cowboys are going to prepare for Ezekiel Elliott to be in the game Sunday against the Giants.
There's just so much gray area. There's so much gray area with the investigation. It's the same as it was with the Deflategate. Like, I remember the phrase that they used in the Wells report or the Wells investigation for Deflategate. Brady, more likely than not, was responsible for deflating football. Like, that was their hardcore evidence that he more likely than not. They didn't even have concrete evidence that he did anything. And it's the same with this Ezekiel Elliott case. Something probably went on. There were definitely issues involved. But the lead investigator found that the victim was not a credible source.
Yeah, and possibly not a victim at all. And that's the wild thing, because the Columbus Police Department looked into this and said, we got nothing for this. The guy who was doing the investigation for the Columbus Police Department said, I think personally that there was some kind of violence that went on, but I don't know from when and from whom. There's not enough here. There's so much he said, she said, that I couldn't go forward with the case. And that's basically what this Roberts woman is saying, is that there's so much he said, she said, and this woman has not shown herself to be completely credible, I can't recommend any game suspension because I'm not sure anything wrong really happened.
And it wasn't like it was a minor, like, two-game suspension. This is six games. That's over a third of the season.
Yeah.
Six games.
And I think a second suspension for this would get him lifetime ban.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Six games for this, though. I mean,
six games for something that
how
is...
How do you arrive at that number? I mean...
Six games is, for me, the weirdest part because it's such a... To be able to give six games for a gray area like this is really, really, really harsh. Real quick, Blake WDE7 tweets at Arkishay, does the NFL really have any problems? $$$$$. Well, you have these kind of problems when you talk about players wanting to play for a commissioner and a ruling process that may not be on the up and up. Do they have problems making money? No. Not right now. They seem to be pretty flush with cash, so get a commissioner that can do similar things. You don't think Roger Goodell could lose his job today and some other lawyer, let's just say Diet Cole got a law degree today, couldn't be able to figure out how to make the NFL some money? Here's what you go. You go to NBC and be like, you want the NFL? Here's my number. Here's my phone number, and here's the contract number. You know how much... You know the NFL does the highest ratings of everything that's not like Game of Thrones? Like, the NFL does the biggest numbers of everything. Who doesn't want that on their TV channel? Oh, by the way, if the NBC doesn't want to do it, you know who will be calling? Hello.
CBS, Fox, NFL Network. I mean,
they'll take all the games.
Yeah.
UPNs, that still exists. They would take the... WB is taking the games.
The CW.
Charles Kramer tweets, Goodell and the owners also colluded against Tim Tebow. Look at him thrive in the ML. Oh, come on. Thriving? Yeah. All right, now we got out of control. We're going to take a timeout when we come back. Exclusive audio from the pregame speech that Ed Orgeron has already recorded for the BYU game. Really, really surprised that he recorded it. But you know what? We're going to play it for you next. Cube Show. Back live here on the Cube Show on a Hover Helmet Fantasy Football Friday. Get those picks in. College quarterback, college running back, college wide receiver. Most points wins a Hover Helmet of your choice. You can check them out, hoverhelmets.com. That is where they are rotating right now for you to get a gander of what you're going to see. 910 is the number, 663-5663. Again, the number is 910-663-5663. Joel Cord is coming up. And about 7 or 8 minutes from now to get right into the wheelhouse of Diet Cold, which is NBA talk. Did you just crack your neck? That was gross, man. Don't do that. That was gross. So we have a source inside the LSU program. You may have heard him on this show before, who is very near and dear to them. And, probably wasn't supposed to say that much about him. But he went and found us the audio because he told me this weird story yesterday that Coach Orgeron likes to pregame speech the hell out of things, but he doesn't like doing it live because he's worried he's going to get all flustered and rip off a shirt or something like he did back at Tennessee. So he likes to record them and play them over the locker room speaker. Very weird, very weird. But he sent us the very first one, and I'm excited to hear it. I've actually already heard it, but we're going to go ahead and play this. So, if you're ready. Dyko, if you'll go ahead and play this, play it to track two on the computer. Ready? Okay, let me turn it on. Ready?
Hey, man, gather around. Gather around, man. Gather around. Gather around. Gather around. Gather around. I'm Coach O. I'm your coach. You probably already knew that. I'm Coach O. We got a big game coming up Saturday. Got a big game coming up late night. Late nights. Gotta get good sleep. Good sleep. No naps. Got a bunch of BYU kids out there. A bunch of 25-year-old Mormons. All right, Coach. All right, nigga, be careful. They play dirty. They play real dirty, guys. Real dirty. They're going to play through the whistle. All right? They're going to play through and then you pass the whistle. You know what you do? You play with the whistle with them. All right, everybody. Got around. Hey, helmet's not a chair. You don't need. and a bunch of Mormons, we're going to go out there, and we're going to show them that their God is good, but our God is better. Who is John Smith? We don't know who John Smith is. We only know Jesus. We know Jesus and God. I don't mind if you play dirty. I want you to go out there, and I want you to play like Hummers. Because I love my Hummer. You go out there, you play like Hummers. Darius, you go out there and be my Hummer as a tailback. Danny, you try to be a Hummer as a quarterback. We ain't got Harden. I know it's going to be hard. We ain't got Harden. He's hard on that defense. But you know what? We're going to play hard for Harden. We're going to represent the LSU on side of that helmet. Let's be honest, boys. They got a whole bunch of white boys out there. And Darius, you ain't white. Danny, you're a little white. You came from Purdue. That's okay. We're going to play for you. But we're going to be at home. We're going to be Nolans. We're going to be in that Superdome. And we're going to show these guys what it's like to believe in Jesus Christ. We're going to go out there and show them that we're going to beat their ass into the ground every single play. You go out there and you be my Hummer. Can you guys be my Hummer? Be my Hummer.
That's it. That's the thing.
That was inspiring.
Yeah, I think I want to play for him.
Run through a wall for that guy.
Be my Hummer. What does that even mean?
I don't know.
Did he really, just like that car so much? Does he really just still drive a Hummer, you think?
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Cajun thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the pregame speech. I don't know if ESPN will air that. We got it first.
It's a Cube Show exclusive.
It is an exclusive. Be my Hummer. I think that's the team motto this year. I hope it is. That's going to be great. We're going to take a quick timeout. We come back. We get right into the wheelhouse of Mr. Diet Cole. We talk to Joel Cordes. Final thoughts as Isaiah Thomas has been traded to Cleveland for Kyrie Irving. We are back on the Hover Helmet Fantasy Football Friday. Get your college quarterback, running back, and wide receiver in. 910-663-5663. Only got two more hours to get those picks in. After that, you are going to be out of the running for this week's chance to win a Hover Helmet, courtesy of hoverhelmets.com. To the phone lines we go. We go to Mr. Joel Cordes. Long time no talk, Joel, but NBA offseason, trying to take over football season for at least a couple days. What's up, man?
Yeah, it's taking its shot for sure. And then you get the second wave of stories here on this blockbuster trade that almost didn't happen. It's crazy.
Okay, so obviously the trade is Kyrie Irving basically for Isaiah Thomas with some other pieces around it. We had talked before on the program that you thought that there was no way Kyrie was going to be able to play for Cleveland. When you saw that the landing spot was going to be Boston, were you surprised?
Oh, absolutely. This was one of those moments that are few and far between. They come along maybe once a season, every couple of seasons, where you really just don't see a rumor coming. And then when it pops up, it's so quick between rumor and actual deal going down. It reminded me in a lot of ways of when LeBron James left the Miami Heat and suddenly wound back up in Cleveland. Now, that was on his own volition, but it certainly was a surprise, you know, even for those plugged into the NBA. But the average NBA fan today, you get all that the rumors on your smartphone anyway, and you're about as plugged in as the reporters are. And really, you know, it was the rumor of the deal, and 20 minutes later it was done.
Yeah, it's crazy how quick that happened. And then you, last Friday night, getting the message while I was doing the football game and getting the notifications that this thing may actually not happen at all because the physical for Cleveland on Isaiah Thomas, they apparently did know he had a bit of a lame hip. They couldn't have been that surprised by this, right?
No, they knew he had it because he missed the tail end of the playoff series against the Cavaliers when he went down with that injury. So they knew it was there. They knew that he was still in recovery, that he had not started workouts yet. But it's one of those things where until you get him in for your team's physical and your team's doctors get a look at him, you really don't know. And I guess the scary part in all of this is that the red flag was raised not beforehand, but after their doctors had seen him. So there's great uncertainty about the severity of the injury. Of course, Isaiah Thomas is on record as saying, you know, all the doctors that I've seen, This isn't career-threatening. No one has said that I'm going to miss next season. You know, I may not be ready for the start of next season, but I will be back and I should be the same player. Well, of course, that's what Isaiah Thomas would say. You don't typically see a team, whether it be the Cavaliers or anybody, having their doctor take a look at a guy and then overblowing the issue just so that they can try to recoup some other type of compensation in it. So it certainly is eyebrow-raising. And now there's the rumors running around out there that, you know, LeBron James and Tyronn Lue were worried after that physical, too.
And the additional compensation was like a 2020 second-round pick. It's not like they picked up a huge other piece.
Correct. It sounded like both teams, well, the Cavaliers especially, kind of went back to the drawing board and then were asking for a younger player, whether it be Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, and the Celtics said, no, absolutely not. It would have been bad form for the Cavaliers to try and, I mean, really turn the screws on this or even back out of the deal. That would have been almost unheard of, though it would have been within their right. They just would have had to prove that Thomas had failed the physical, not red flagged it, but failed that physical, and it doesn't sound like it was to that point. So they pick up something for their troubles. This was one of those things, too, where if Cleveland is the one that, let's say, scuttles that deal, they're still in a world of hurt because now you have a very disgruntled Kyrie Irving still on your team. You gave up what was obviously the best deal you could get because otherwise you wouldn't be trading a superstar player to your rival in the East. They would have been stuck there sitting with him, and there's a track record whether you want to go back to Lamar Odom or past deals where a guy thought he was getting traded, then sticks on that team. It's never pretty, even for the next team that he gets traded to.
Joel, the Celtics have basically revamped their entire roster. They're only going to have four players back next year from last year's 53-win team. What are you expecting? Are you expecting there to be like kind of a learning curve for Brad Stevens in this roster with Irving and Gordon Hayward and Jason Tatum? Or what do you think this Celtics team is going to look like next year?
There will be a learning curve for sure. But when you talk about the four guys that they kept, they're all very key people in that rotation. Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier maybe aren't going to be starters, although Smart might start at shooting guard alongside Kyrie Irving because they're going to need his defense. Al Horford obviously was one of their main players last year, and he's part of that big three. And then even Jaylen Brown, who was a rookie last season, he's going to be a five-tool player, really suiting up probably at three, maybe even four different positions, depending on where they need him. He could wind up being a starter if they move Gordon Hayward to shooting guard instead. So there's going to be institutional knowledge that's left there. But you're right, it's a lot to bring in. Obviously, Gordon Hayward and Brad Stevens go back a long ways. There'll be familiarity there. Brad Stevens has coached Kyrie Irving at some of the lower levels. So all of these people are familiar with one another, but it'll take time for that to translate. Marcus Morris comes over from the Detroit Pistons. He'll be a guy that's got to get into that system at least, although he's a longtime NBA player, and then Jason Tatum is a rookie. So that's your Boston Celtics rotation right there, is those eight guys. And I think it'll take a little while. The question is, when push comes to shove and they get in those deep playoff series, what's the pecking order? And you know that it's going to be Kyrie Irving at the top, at least on offense.
And as for Cleveland, it seemed like last year, especially in the finals, a team like Golden State really targeted Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love in pick and rolls. And now you're basically subbing Kyrie Irving out for Isaiah Thomas, who's even worse defensively. What exactly changed for Cleveland defensively? Is Jay Crowder going to help that much, or what can we expect from them as they try and make another push for another finals?
Jay Crowder is going to help immensely because he can play a bunch of different positions like LeBron James. He's a smart defender. He's a very physical defender. He's a good athlete. He can knock down the three at the other end. And it's that type of player that they really didn't have last year. They tried to have it be Richard Jefferson 2 years ago, and that worked, but Jefferson couldn't give them the same kind of minutes. You're absolutely right, though, at the point guard position, when you talk about pick-and-roll defense, they're still back to being in trouble. Isaiah Thomas gives you a world of options on offense. I think they're going to bring Thomas off the bench, not only because he's coming back from an injury, but because he is the perfect sixth-man type of spark plug, whereas Derrick Rose, I think you need to get into a rhythm anyway. So you spot start Derrick Rose, you give him the first you know, 10 minutes of a half, basically, and then play Isaiah Thomas the rest of the way. It anchors that Cavaliers second unit, which was a problem. He doesn't have to be on the floor at the exact same time as Love and LeBron, but he can be when you get down the stretch. But pick-and-roll defense is a problem. Derrick Rose struggled in it last year. Jose Calderon is washed up both defensively and offensively, except for knocking down a jump shot. So they're really going to be relying on LeBron James, Jay Crowder, and then whatever they can get out of J.R. Smith. That's going to be their pick-and-roll defense, and it's enough to get them out of the East again, perhaps, but that same problem against the Warriors is the same that everybody has.
Joel Cordes, thanks so much for giving us a little bit of time. B-Ball Joel on Twitter. Have a good one, sir. Talk to you soon.
All right. Enjoy your Football Friday.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Joel Cordes. By the way, if you want to get in on the Football Friday, it is easy and fun to do so. Text in to the number 910-663-5663. A quarterback, a running back, a wide receiver that are playing college this weekend, including Monday, and the highest score wins. That's the way you do it. So get in now. You only have 2 more hours to do this. Only the rest of this show, once we get to 10 o'clock, no longer take submissions. So this is it. So we're going to go to a timeout coming up soon. We're going to talk to Mr. Ron Thulin, who is going to be calling the game for UAB and Alabama A&M on the Stadium Channel. You know about the Stadium Channel?
I do not.
The Stadium Channel, I didn't know existed until 2 weekends ago when I looked at my Sling TV, and I get it, which is neat. Huh. It's a channel I had not gotten much familiarity with until I looked for it, and I got it, and I'm excited because the game, that's an interesting game coming up tomorrow with Alabama A&M and UAB. The return of UAB, but more importantly, the return to get that ass whipped by Alabama A&M. That's what I'm calling. I'm calling for James Spady to go out there and get the upset. We are preparing for a team that doesn't exist.
Yeah. No film on them.
We'll find out what that's like broadcasting and trying to get ready for that as well. Coming up, plus, still to come, Dell Jackson, hopefully Cole Kublik, and Nick Flanagan in the 9 o'clock.